Hey, and welcome to another fantastic, scintillating episode of your favorite podcast on the face of the planet. This is Tech Explaining, and I am joined today with the entire full crew of with Brett, Rob, and Stephanie. And today we're going to be doing our end of the year, end of the decade, entering the Roaring Twenties podcast that you guys have been anticipating since we started this podcast a few years ago. So I have now set the expectation really, really high, and it's up to you guys to make sure it doesn't suck. So what's going on, guys?
Oh, you know, it's the end of the year. So what could be better? I mean, it's I'm off work, and it doesn't look like you guys are, but I'm off work.
And but yeah, Rob, I'm never off work.
I know, right? But yeah, it's been a good. I think it's been a good year / decade, though. You know, it's kind of interesting, and I'm glad we're having this kind of review. Obviously, we want to spend more time on the last year, but the last decade's been crazy, right? I mean, we've gone from, 10 years ago, we were getting ready for SharePoint 2010 to come out. How about that?
That's weird to think about.
That's crazy. Like, you know, I was thinking about that as back then, you know, just 10 years ago, which in the grand scheme of things is not a long time. I know it is in the IT world, but nobody was really ready for the cloud. Office 365, I don't think was much of a thing at that point. I think they might've had BPOS, back then, but
there was talk of it, right?
Yeah. I mean, they were talking about going to there, and they were having some, really, great discussions on moving there. And then all of a sudden at some point they said, oh, okay, boom, everything's cloud. And you know, we still had this on-premise thing that was, the story was not really fully fleshed out, I don't believe. But, 10 years later, we're all working with the cloud. And it's just an amazing vision to see come through.
Yeah, we had Sandbox Solutions and Silverlight Web Parts. I mean, what more could any...
You locked up. So what more could anyone want?
Right. What more could anybody want than Silverlight Web Parts or Sandbox Solutions?
Silverlight's the future. It's coming back as Blazor now. Have you guys looked into Blazor at all?
No.
So I've just started looking into it myself, but the kind of one of the new things coming from Microsoft, there's some Ignite sessions on it. Is this technology called Blazor, where you can basically package up your .NET DLLs as a WebAssembly and execute them in browser, like you could with Silverlight and that type of technology. So it's coming full circle a decade later.
That's terrifying.
It'll be interesting to see how it works out. I mean, maybe this time it'll stick. Mm.
And Stephanie, you were still like in school or something, right? Weren't you still in college in 2010?
No. I had been out of school at least a couple years by then.
That's a youngest person on the podcast joke, I guess.
No. I was well into the workforce at that point. I think I'd been working about 10 years in IT by then, probably 8 or so years out of school. And I do still remember as, an employee sitting there and having my boss tell me there's this software as a service thing that was coming. And I just remember not even really being able to put my arms around it at the time. Like, why would you ever have that or need that? And how would it work? It was really kind of beyond anything that I could comprehend at that point in time. And then here we are, and that's the same boss that he was the first person I know that had email on his phone, right? So a lot has changed in the way we think about tech since then. I don't know. Where were you at, Rob, when all this stuff started coming out? Oh, were you?
I was still working at the same company, actually. But we were all, heavy on-prem, right? There was no plans for us to go to the cloud at all, none. And, we're really heavy on-prem. And as they started talking about the story of cloud, I think we helped Microsoft shape that story for the on-prem side, because I really believe early on that Microsoft thought it was going to be like a big bang change. Like, they were going to release this cloud thing. Everybody's going to come and want to move to it. But that really wasn't the case, at least in the enterprise world. We had to have that on-prem solution at that point, largely because with the evolution of what they've done in the cloud, I mean, they really had, you know, one place to put your data. So you had to choose whatever location to put your data center in, you know, and that's where your data lived, which was great if you're a single company or a, you know, a smaller company that doesn't have multiple geo-distributed locations, right? But for us, I mean, it really was, we couldn't go to the cloud until that story was more fleshed out. I was really working with SharePoint 2010 and trying to get us ready for that. We had a very large SharePoint 2007 instance that we were upgrading from, which was huge, to get to 2010. If you remember, SharePoint 2007 was probably not the best upgrade path to 2010 that they had.
2007 was the best version of SharePoint.
It was okay. I mean, it got us places, you know. It was the first, I would say 2007 was probably the first real version of SharePoint.
I agree.
But 2010 was just I think it was at least the 2010s was an amazing transformational time for all of us. And I think we've all seen similar. We've been on the same path, but have very different stories to tell. And I think that's what's amazing about it is that we're all still doing different things, but the trajectory was very, very similar.
Well, it's influenced us for the past decade as well. 10 years ago, I was working with the State Department on SharePoint 2007. And so the cloud was not even a thought. It was like, no, we're very much in this 2007 environment with very strict controls over anything we did. And that's why I had to really, suck it up and embrace client side dev, which again has influenced me for the past decade, like crazy.
Well, I'm sitting here as we speak, and if you're watching this this on YouTube, I'm drinking coffee out of my Azure cup, wearing my Power BI shirt, with Mark with his Microsoft Teams shirts. I mean, none of this stuff really existed to any level of usage 10 years ago.
So, for us, I mean, I don't think much has changed at all, really. It's apart from the development model. I was doing the same thing 10 years ago. We were creating more or less the same products as well, but yeah, they've been rewritten three times. So that's been the biggest shift. It's really gone from being a server-side code thing, obviously, to a client-side code, but three different development models. We've used an app store to sell our products and really gone back to selling them through the website with client side web parts, and that's really been the main change, just the development model, and there's been a big learning curve along with that. But other than that, I was doing the same thing 10 years ago.
So I was doing migrations 10 years ago. That's probably the majority of what I was doing. Over the past maybe the first five of those 10 years, I was doing a lot with migration. So 2003 to 2007, 2007 into 2010, 2010 into 2013. What's interesting now is that you compare that and this might be our final migration, right? We're going into the cloud. We hopefully never have to do this whole migration thing again. We'll see. but no, the upgrades are gone. Migrations eventually working their way out of the picture. And then now we actually have the ability to do important stuff, business stuff, create cool things, because we don't have to worry about all that back end migrating, upgrading, updating kind of stuff, both server and SharePoint. So I think the evolution of my role in IT pro definitely evolving in a significant way. We've all got to, those of us doing those kind of migrations have to figure out what's next and what to learn and what to do.
Well, I think that's a, go ahead, Brett.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's the message that we saw from Ignite, and we probably talked about that before as well, was that it really has been a bit unstable. How moving to the cloud has been, Microsoft has really tried to sort of catch up with the features that were available in SharePoint on premises, but also deliver as modern at the same time. And that's been quite a shift for them. So it's almost like they've been migrating to a certain extent as well. But now that they've done that, they're able to fast forward all these new features. I think there's going to be a great deal to look forward to over the next year or two from Microsoft, and also maybe the next decade as well. Be interesting to see if we're still here in the next decade.
I'm going to be here. No. I mean, I think so on the migration story, it's kind of interesting. I think it's, it is evolving, in that I don't think you're going to be migrating from on-prem to the cloud as much. I still think there will be some of that over the next at least 5 years. What I do see is that as more and more of these products become multi-geo, we're going to have to migrate things around in real time, right? For things that get provisioned in places that shouldn't be provisioned there, right? So a great example is that right now, we provision SharePoint sites in a specific location that's tied to your primary data location in Azure Active Directory. So if I'm in the UK, my site gets created in the UK. If I'm in the US, it gets created in the US. Now, that's true only for the SharePoint stuff, right? All of the stuff, Planner, and all of the conversations and all of the things that happen around there may or may not be in that location. So as more and more of these tools start becoming multi-geo aware, what I see is that we're going to have a migration, because you might have a team. I'll use teams since I just saw looking at Microsoft, Mark's shirt here. But the if you have a team, right, your team might be provisioned in the U.S., and your, which is your SharePoint site and all the files, but your planner, for example, might be in Europe somewhere, or might be somewhere else, wherever your home tenant is. So as planner becomes, as an example, as planner becomes more multi-geo aware, we're going to eventually have to kind of true that up, right? To say, where is this team located? Where is the SharePoint site located? Okay, now let me migrate that planner to that location as well. Because I think that's, so I think migrations, I don't think they're going to go away. I think they're going to change in the context for what we have to do, at least in the multi-geo world, the big enterprise world. You guys may never see that, but it's going to be an issue for me. It's going to be an issue for me, and I would expect it would be for you guys as well.
And we've got some clients that have those questions and concerns today. So yeah, so that I can totally agree with what you're saying. But one of the other biggest things that I've seen over the past decade is that, 10 years ago, our main customers were IT. And I would say today, our main clients are not, there's not IT. It's like, you're already in Office 365. We're working with the business groups to help them take advantage of those tools and get them rolled out. So we may never talk to IT for the projects we do these days, sometimes. So I think that's a huge shift over the past
decade. I think that's a huge deal too, because I think that's the people with the, that are doing those types of roles are the ones with the real problems you have to solve, not some mediator that's in IT that's kind of talking for them. You're talking to them, right? And I think that's awesome, especially for you guys doing consulting.
Yeah, and I think the IT's emphasis now becomes putting that barrier around the outside, the security, the compliance. How do I create that fenced-in backyard so that as, those business users come into play and they start building things, I mean, it's a pretty big deal that an end user, a power user, can create their own forms and workflow. And then now we've got this whole setting where they can go out and purchase their own stuff, or might be coming soon anyway. So now IT really has to double down in understanding how to configure the environment, because as it is by itself, it's pretty wide open, because Microsoft is definitely encouraging the collaboration and the creation of new business processes and things like that. But it's IT's job now to make sure that our intellectual property is protected and that we're doing the right things. With a general balance, because IT tends to come in and squelch everything. They want to shut everything off. And I say they, I mean we, really, right? I mean, we're all kind of in that space where we need to make sure everything's protected. We're responsible for the IP. And at the same time, we've kind of got to keep control over the business, which is really ready to go. I think in many cases, we underestimate the business capability for being able to handle these things, these new tools that are available.
Right. So yeah, like you said, a lot of times we become that mediator now too, because we have to talk to IT and understand why you need to allow us to do this, because there are reactions we know. We want control. We don't want you to do that. And so we have to, we have to wear more hats now. But I enjoy it. I think that's a valuable space to be in right now.
See, I think on that space,
even when you have to wait 3 months.
Well, see,
for a VM in order to run PowerShell.
Yeah.
Well, see, I think that space is probably where I expect to see the most growth as well over the next few years. Is that right now, I mean, setting policies and doing all of the things you need to do to actually maintain your environment, I believe, I mean, it works, but it's very, very much in its infancy right now. I think that is, you know, like the Security and Compliance Center in Office 365 is great. It just feels like it was designed by somebody who loves security and compliance, right? It's just a terrible experience to try to configure this stuff. And the capabilities are not really there to support everything you need, especially in like, you know, in the big enterprise space. I mean, you can do the basic stuff, like you can set policies to delete sites if they haven't been used in X amount of time, minimum of 30 days or whatever, you know, or conversations or whatever. But I mean, as far as going, doing things like, e-discovery searches and, you know, things across your, you know, across your platform, it works great in products like OneDrive, and you can isolate that stuff to pull that stuff. Once you start expanding out into SharePoint and Microsoft Teams, it gets a little more complex. And then once you start expanding out into multi-geo, it gets a whole lot more complex because you can't really query across your geographies. You have to do one at a time. So if you've got users that are, you know, got kind of cross-border workers, which a lot of multi-geo places do, then it becomes really difficult to track all their stuff down. So I believe, you know, the Security Compliance Center and applying policies and labels and all of that stuff is going to have to grow, and I believe it will grow in the next few years.
When I think on the flip side of that, it's huge for the small to medium business who's never had these kind of tools accessible before, that, you know, it's always those layers you had to purchase and purchase the thing, purchase a third party tool, you know, have the expertise to run it. And now the layers are getting easier to implement. They're throwing a lot of that stuff into what's already in an E3. You don't have to have the E5 for all of it now. So I think on the flip side of that, while you have a lot of complications, they've brought the small to medium business a long way in coming forward to kind of be able to give them the tools they need to survive in the cloud. It's just a matter of getting that education through so that they can utilize all those tools. Because I think right now, having those available at a small and medium business is great. I don't know that everybody has the time. They're kind of the jack of all trades type. They've got a big learning curve in order to use some of that stuff.
Well, then they get the new stuff thrown at them all the time without notice too. So they've got to also take that into account.
Well, and also, you know, before this was a real thing, like if you're just running on premises, you know, many of these capabilities were so far out of reach or just they were so far out there that they were just unavailable, completely unavailable to small and medium-sized businesses. I mean, you just couldn't afford to implement a lot of this stuff. And the stuff you're talking about, Stephanie, I think is spot on because it's really, you get that stuff for free. It's a value add based on the license you have, which a lot of them, many of them have E3. And much of the stuff that comes with E3 on that side of the house was so far out of reach for small and medium companies. You got to maybe stand up a couple servers for your SharePoint farm and, you know, put it behind a firewall, maybe. And after that, I mean, it was really, you know, you're off to the races there. You had no e-discovery. You had no, you know, way to really look it into this, into your farm or really administer it or anything like that. So I think on that side of the house, that's just phenomenal, the capabilities that are there.
I think multi-factor authentication is the biggest thing that comes to mind for me. Like if you don't have that on, you should. That's probably the first thing you should do is flip that on the second you get your tenant up and running. And it's that easy, really. You don't need to have any kind of complex background in order to configure that now. Whereas I think before you needed additional tools and skill sets and things to make that happen. So I think that's probably the biggest, maybe the biggest impact out of all the things they've rolled out. For small and medium business, and very critical. We've seen so many breaches in the cloud where, you know, something as simple as MFA really knocks that down.
Well, then on top of that, external sharing is now something that's available to everybody. But before the cloud, to set up external sharing with somebody was a pain to get external people signed into your account to do FTP things. I mean, you had to have FTP before. So it's just, you know, it's more secure. You've got external sharing is a lot easier. It's a reality for these companies that could never consider it before.
Do you see that MFA has really cut down on a lot of this? Or, I mean, because I'll just say on a broad scale, I mean, for the most part, when I get a, you know, a message on my phone or whatever that says MFA, I mean, a lot of times I will say, no, that I'm not trying to log in right now, so I'll kind of decline that that request. But many people, many of our users just approve, right? So would you say that it's cut down on a lot of the intrusion stuff, or do you think it's just another way for them to just click approve and let whoever's trying to get in, get in?
Well, I think that's an education thing. It's probably somewhere in the middle. I think probably for those, I would like to think it's taking care of a huge amount of our admin accounts, which have the global admin access. I'd love to think that those that have that level of access in their tenant are at least being somewhat cautious about what they're approving, which is really kind of the, you know, the major account to watch, at least. I know that the Monday morning, last week, Monday morning, I had two or three come through and I was aware of it, right? I'm like, oh, interesting. You know, but of course they're going to hit you that first day. Everybody's on vacation over the holidays. Of course, hackers are going to hit that day. I had two or three that day. I'd like to think we're taking out a chunk of them.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Wow. That's crazy. Well, one thing I love about the Azure Active Directory configuration of that is that it's essentially a checkbox that you can check to say, hey, I want MFA on this. Yeah. And it expands out into your apps. So if you host apps that are authenticated with Azure Active Directory, whether they're on-prem or they're in the cloud, you can also easily set that up with a checkbox on those apps. And I think that's such a huge thing, especially if you're rolling out a lot of custom features.
Great.
And of course, some of these features we're talking about when we're reviewing the decade, these are things in the decade as well.
Yeah, they came out in the last decade. You broke up, but I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah. So 2013 saw the start of e-discovery, and so that was thought about for obviously some time following up to that, and also the external sharing, the introduction of sharing through SharePoint 2013 was started with the share buttons and so on, and you can see the thought process going on through to the cloud way back then. I think it's been a good 10 years to shape the product that we've got today. I'm going to try not to talk too much because I don't know whether you couldn't hear me or not.
Yeah, we got it. We're all thinking it was so good that we're all thinking about what do we say after that.
Hey Brett, what's happened really in the ISV market? You know, over the last 10 years. I mean, I know from a like business growth and planning, because I think you're in a very different place now, like today, than you were in 2010.
Yeah, so back in 2010, we were selling, you know, web part solution packages. They were being sold via our website, and pretty much the same solutions, but I agree with and not necessarily the business user. It then evolved with the add-in model. So, yeah, we started to recreate things, and that was a big disruption to... we started to redevelop everything under the apps, and we started to make them available through the App Store. And to be honest, that wasn't a success for us. And I think I hear that story with every single ISV out there. The pricing model didn't fit. It was difficult to get upgrades, hot fixes, and so on to your customer base because you had to go through this approval mechanism with Microsoft, and they would disapprove you for silly reasons. So it was difficult to deliver a solution to a customer. And then of course we had our hands tied. They weren't sandbox solutions. We never developed anything under the sandbox solution model. Thank God. Thank goodness for that. But so it's been nice to be able to develop under the SharePoint framework and actually start to, we feel like we've had our handcuffs taken off and we can start to develop some really good solutions again. And we've started off not being able to deliver those through an app store because Microsoft didn't make that available. And actually, I think I've come around to liking that again a little bit better. Actually, you know, doing our own marketing and pushing the products out. So that whole development model has really driven some changes in the company. It's like I say, it's been quite a learning curve for the developers as well to adopt things like the SharePoint framework and things like that. that, but it's not changed too dramatically, I guess. the gaps in the product are still there that our products fill. I think there has been some trends where back in 2010, the start of the decade, we saw the business data catalog became business connectivity services, and that was huge for us back then. And now, you know, we hardly see or hear of anybody using business connectivity services anymore. But it's just not used. there's other options available, you know. So there's been quite a few changes. Some products have taken off, others have taken a backseat, like BCS Metaman, as mentioned. But it's been an interesting ride, and I still feel like we're climbing the roller coaster. So,
So what do you guys see as, like, what do you think's next for the next decade? What do you think people should be spending their time in? I mean, do you, based upon where the trends of things are going and the technology, and you know, if you were just now entering this space, or you're in charge of IT somewhere, what should they be looking at in the next decade that they need to be concentrating on?
I think I probably would not want to be an ISV starting out now. That's for sure. But the, I think the concentration for us is going to be through Microsoft Teams as a platform for collaboration. Just being able to develop the solutions under the Teams tab and helping users to be more productive through that collaboration tool of Microsoft Teams would be a focus than WebParts inside of SharePoint. Also, I think, you know, the Power Platform. So there are limitations as to what you can do with Flow, with Power Apps, also with Power BI, and I think there's quite a big door open there for filling some of those gaps with things like custom actions and components available as tools as well. So certainly as an organization, I think that's where our future is going to be, not necessarily SharePoint tools and web parts.
Interesting. Yeah, I think in the next 10 years, you know, AI and the cognitive services are going to just become more and more huge. I mean, especially with, like you said, Cortex coming out and Microsoft's investment in AI, I think that's going to be, I think, the next decade where we're going to be sitting 10 years from now talking about, you know, right now we're just really talking about AI, but I think in a decade we're going to see it in ways that we had never imagined before.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is the ISV is the biggest change has actually been, you know, we're not developing these solutions where we know what the path is going to be like for the next 3 to 6 years. Now with Office 365 as an ISV, you're that guy that's like running ahead of a steam engine. Right. And that steamroller is Microsoft, you know. It's like, at what point is our product going to be squashed by them? So,
yeah, there is the better this, product you have, the better the chances of getting squashed. So
it keeps you on your toes, that's for sure.
So if you just concentrate on creating mediocre products that Microsoft doesn't want, then I think that's going to be your best case scenario.
You say concentrate on that, I mean, take a backward step.
Well, not that you guys do that. I'm just saying that would be a good plan for an ISV would be, let's not set that bar too high. We don't want Microsoft squashing us.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, paint a bigger target on your back, that's for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think AI machine learning is definitely, I don't, Mark, you mentioned Project Cortex, but I think the big thing Project Cortex is trying to solve is the whole mining for knowledge, right? Mining your data. We're loading tons of data up into the cloud right now. And it's kind of just sitting out there, just waiting to be mined and stuff. And I think this is where we're going to see a lot of growth here and hopefully a lot of great impact on what we do in the cloud is mining this data. I think they call it knowledge mining in the AI world. But I really do believe that's going to be a huge thing over the next 10 years if they can solve the problem. It's the problem that you know, knowledge management people have been trying to solve since the dawn of time, you know, is really trying to mine this data. And I think that's where I want to see that's where I expect to see growth. Now, Power Platform as well, if you're new, I think you asked, Mark, if you're new, where should you focus? Power Platform will absolutely help you solve problems very quickly. And you can be really almost immediately effective on providing no code solutions. If you're not a coder, if you're just a regular business user, you can provide a lot of these solutions to get your job done more efficiently with that Power Platform. But I do see the knowledge mining of this stuff being put up. I mean, I think we literally just this week crossed a petabyte of data in OneDrive. And right now you can search it, but it's not being mined, right? I mean, right. It's just stuff that people are uploading and you can search and find your stuff. But what does that mean? What does that stuff mean to the business? And I think that's where the knowledge mining is going to come in.
Yeah. I think
I definitely agree with all of that stuff. I think also we're seeing a huge transition in order to use all of this technology. We think about those that are struggling with it. A lot of them will be retiring. They're leaving the workforce. And there's a huge group of young people, my kids included, right? The next 10 years, both of my kids enter the workforce. They've had iPads since the day they were born, practically. I think our ability to use this technology transitions dramatically, our ability to take advantage of it. And I think the huge transition here, not just in the tech available, but in our ability to translate that into something efficient, business process, like the whole way that we work, we have huge possibilities in front of us over the next 10 years because of those opportunities that open up with those that are potentially more open-minded or more able to take advantage of it simply because they've had it their entire lives. Be interesting.
It's funny you mentioned that. My oldest daughter is sat the next room to me right here at my office, and she brought along her Surface, her iPad, and also her Oculus Go, which we got for Christmas as well. So yeah, she's just surrounded by tech.
Well, yeah, and so that's the thing. Like the Oculus is an example. My oldest has had that for a couple of years now, and that's just an amazing piece of tech that I see that, you know, he's going to have. I mean, he was probably 13 when he got it. So he'll have it, you know, 8 years or been exposed to that kind of technology for 10 years or so before he hits the workforce. But when you see technologies that companies are playing with, like the augmented reality stuff, the Halo project or whatever. Is it Halo? I think that's what it is. What's the Microsoft?
HoloLens.
Yeah, that's that thing. It's just not as compelling, right, as something like an Oculus. Like the Oculus is extremely immersive. It's virtual reality versus augmented reality, right? But still, even the graphics, I think Andrew would put on this HoloLens and be like, well, this is just terrible. You know, just a terrible experience because it's not equivalent to what he's had already. And I think Stephanie, you're spot on, is that these kids coming out are going to start demanding things that they've had all their lives, you know, in the business world. It might not be Oculus or 3D or anything like that, but things like that, right? They've lived with that technology for, you know, when they hit the workforce 10, 15 years.
I'm not sure
it's going to be expected.
Seeing SharePoint through an Oculus equivalent thing, I just can't picture that yet. But maybe like Stephanie said, software as a service 10 years ago. You know, it's
no, not at all. But think about where working remote was 10 years ago, right? It was just unheard of, right? You almost could not do remote working in IT 10 years ago. And I think for that has really changed over the last 10 years. I mean, you see, I would say the majority of people that I know do work some component from home, right? They do some kind of work from home. You know, even if you go into the office 3 or 4 times a week, you're still able to work remote way more now than you were 10 years ago.
Oh yeah. A majority of our employees are remote, and it fits perfectly with the cloud and what we do. So yeah, absolutely.
I forgot to mention that. That's actually a good one for the last 10 years evolution. Yeah, that's good stuff. Oh, you know what? What else was a major deal that happened in the last 10 years is we started this podcast.
That's true. That's probably the most epic thing to happen in the past 10 years, right? I mean, And this will be the first one that we're doing a video for. So it'll be people who can listen to us can see our faces, and those who didn't know about us can start listening to us now. So
see, we, and for those not in the know, we actually started this at my house, or decided to do this at my house over some good barbecue and beer and just a lot of great conversation.
Yeah. I beat your son on the foot race, on a flame.
Yeah, we actually cooked the food on a flame, not in
imagine that.
That's something else that's happened in the past decade. We've moved off from the flame to the sous vide. So.
Yeah, that's right. Stephanie's just shaking her head. I love it.
We get that a lot too. So
she's like, boys. Well, you know,
I've always been, in probably my whole career, something that has changed a lot over the last 10 years. You know, I'm drinking here out of my Humans of IT community mug. It's probably backwards on the screen here, but I am less alone in the fact that I kind of got used to for a long time being the only female in the room, the only female on the podcast here represent. But I think that's changed in a big way. And we're starting to see more women come out into not just IT, but I think in the community, having enough confidence to come out and speak and do cool things. You know, shout out to Melissa and April. They just got sucked into the Microsoft machine. So, you know, we're really starting to see, and not just women, but diversity in general. I think our community, SharePoint in general, has been pretty inclusive from my experience, but I think we're starting to see it kind of spread into other areas as well within Microsoft. So I think that's been a huge transition in the last 10 years. It's a big, big deal.
Yeah. Massive. And it's a game changer for the industry as a whole, because we need everybody's opinion. We need everybody at the table, because if it's just one demographic or two demographics calling the shots, that you never, ever will get the best solutions possible. And I think this is such a major shift in a positive direction. I'm with you. I'm so happy to see that. And the community, I think overall, provides a great platform for anybody that wants to get involved to be, you know, be supported. And if it's your first time speaking or whatever, you'll be supported. They won't come and just trash you or anything like that. They'll help you and answer questions. And how do I do this? And what can I do to speak better or convey my message better? Or how do I design this solution better? Right. I think that's that's such a great thing we've always had with this community, but to see it kind of transition into all of IT is such a massive thing.
Agreed.
Mark, you're not going to argue with me here?
How would I argue?
I don't know. We got to argue about something.
Okay. Well, I mean, I would say that, the thing is, you've all said it already, that SharePoint's always kind of felt like that, but we do see it spreading now. So I think that's great. And I think it's a great time for people to just kind of, find out what they're passionate about and go for it. And I think that hopefully we're creating that environment where people can feel like, I can give this a shot and I can step in and try something. So,
On that topic, and I know we need to wrap here pretty soon, but the on that topic, this year at Ignite, I know there was a huge emphasis on the humans in IT track, right? That was there. And I was a little kind of like, about it, but I made a point to go to several sessions on there. And I would say on that track, and I would say that, in previous years, that the topics they discussed would have never ever come up. So I went to one on how to reduce stress in your day-to-day life. It's kind of the more touchy-feely stuff, right, that you don't think about, but we all have encountered. And the speaker up there, I was like, well, I've had a lot of stress in my life, I could probably do this session, because I've had stress. But the speaker up there, that one of the speakers that was talking had actually, had so much stress that she had a heart attack, right? And she was talking about that from that perspective. And I was like, oh, yeah, I haven't had that much stress, So I think it was a real eye opener to me, right? Because I think that those topics have to be discussed, and I know you guys did some sessions on humans in IT, and I think if I ever submit to another Ignite again, I want to talk on that track because I think it's so important. The technology, we can all get through that. It's the touchy feely stuff that we have to deal with every day. I think is the real hard stuff that should be talked about and should be discussed. Which, I mean, up until the last couple of years, not 10 years, but the last couple of years, it wasn't taboo. It just was never a topic, never a thing.
Right. No, I completely agree with that too. And this was my first year to speak on it. I know Stephanie spoke on it for a little while now. and this is my first year, and I kind of had the same experience as you. It's like, this is really hugely important. And
like, I would do a conference just on those topics. I would go to a conference if just those topics were discussed. I think that would be very much a priority for me.
In Branson?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think they covered burnout too, which is kind of a sidebar to what you were talking about there, Rob. They covered mentorship in addition to, you know, general diversity, inclusion focused things. I think Microsoft will maybe hand us some more formal kind of information and training around diversity inclusion too. That's kind of an area I see them formalizing here in the coming years, but I think it's headed the right direction, and bringing your whole self to work, really important. Being able to, you know, come and be healthy and give your best at work, but also making time for yourself and taking care of yourself. And I think the younger generations get it. They don't, you know, I think everyone complains about millennials, they don't work as hard and whatever, but I think they have more firm boundaries than some of us do in the older generations, and they kind of know when to cut themselves off and to take care of themselves. So maybe we can learn a little bit from that as well.
No, let's not go that far. We're not going to learn from them. I'm kidding. It's a joke.
No, but I think that's right. I think being able to not only bring your whole self, but I think your authentic self as well. Right. I think that was something that rang through in the sessions, was that if you can't bring your whole authentic self, who you are as a person, to the projects, then I think you're in a real bad situation. And I think they talked a lot about how to work with your leadership or whatever to where you could do that. And it might be staying in the job and trying to change the culture of your company, or it might even, you know, include changing jobs to where something that because I've worked jobs to where, you know, I couldn't talk about being a band kid in high school and college. You know, it was just not something that, you know, the it was just not accepted, right? It's just like, you can't talk about that because somebody's going to pick on you or whatever, you right. know? And so that wasn't a good situation for me, because that's very much who I am as a person. You know, music is very much who I am. And, you know, and I think there's all these topics, it's not technology. It's the touchy feely side that we all have to deal with that we don't really always talk about. Right. I think that's super important.
Or humans in IT. And I think that's kind of what the, you know, we need to start.
Humans in IT. Exactly. All right. I know Mark or somebody's got to run here. So do we have anything we want to close with other than, you know, it's been a great past year. You know, we put out on the show some really great content. I enjoyed the Treehouse show was this year at Summit, right?
Yeah,
it was. The Treehouse show? Yeah, it seems so long ago, but that, you know, so we did some really cool shows and some really cool venues, you know, but I think it's just been a fantastic year for all of us here on the show, and hopefully our listeners have had a great time enjoying the ride with us.
I hope Absolutely. You enjoy listening to this at Easter.
That was, for those who don't know, that's a jab at Rob for not getting our shows published on time. But Stephanie will talk about that in the show notes, I'm sure.
That's right. So New Year's resolutions this year, right? We're going to get these things published a little more frequently. I'll get some show notes done. And I don't know, maybe we could like record more often or something.
That would be fantastic. Let's do that.
All right.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening. And if you have any questions or comments, please email us at info@techsplaining.net. And other than that, have a happy new year. And we look forward to bringing you more shows next year.
Happy new year.
Happy new year.